Terry, you are on the record.
Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Wednesday, December 1st, 2021 ADA meeting. I'll call the meeting to order, and I'll ask Rainey to roll call the board members, please.
Ms. Sandy.
I'm here.
Ms. McKinnon.
Here.
Mr. Kendi. Mr. Fogel.
Here.
Mr. Biedlmore.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Chair Cruz.
Here.
All are present.
Thank you. And before we get to the agenda, I'd like to welcome our newest board member, Bill Biedlmore from Fairbanks. Welcome, Bill. Look forward to many good things from you and from your community. Again, if you have any questions, please holler, and we look forward to, I think all of the board members look forward to working with you. So welcome aboard.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Item number 3 on the agenda is our agenda approval. Can we take a look at that? And I haven't heard any comments about any adjustments to the agenda. I'll ask one more time. Are there anybody wishing to make an adjustment to today's agenda before we go to approve it? Seeing none, is there any objection? What's on the agenda, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I move that we approve the agenda as presented.
Second?
Shannon, I'll second.
Thank you. Any objections to adopting the agenda as presented? Hearing and seeing none, the agenda is approved. That brings us to item number 4 on our approved agenda. Prior minutes for October 27th, 2021. I'll ask any board members the opportunity to review the minutes. Any clarifications, comments, or changes?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the meeting minutes, the prior meeting minutes on October 27th as presented.
Board Member Sandy, a second.
Any objection to adopting this? Hearing and seeing none, the minutes are adopted. Brings us to item number 5 on our agenda, public comments. I'd like to remind those folks that wishing to make a public comment to please limit to 2 minutes. Please state your name fully for the record. And if you have an affiliation with any association, we'd like to have that also. Again, this is not a question and answer period. We look forward to your comments. And if there is a question, staff, if you give us an email, staff will certainly get back to you with an answer. With that, Rainey, is there anybody online wishing to make a comment?
Yes, sir, there is. Rainey? Is there anybody in the boardroom that wishes to make a public comment?
No, right now it's the online. Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody on the phone? If there is any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Rick Quebec here from Anchorage. First of all, Merry Christmas and happy holidays to Ada's Board of Staff. The work you do enhances Alaska. It brings jobs and opportunities to bear. It helps the state pay for its budget, and it enriches the permanent fund and its associated dividend structure. The recent decision to litigate your legal, what should be binding leases within the coastal plain of Anwar, shows your commitment to doing what is right for Alaska, regardless of what the political headwinds might be from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and the Joe Biden and his hostile to Alaska administration. Let's go brand new, right? But back to the topic at hand. Since nearly 7 of 10 Alaska residents support the responsible development in Anwar's 1002 area, you're doing the people's work. Regardless of the tired rhetoric you're going to hear most months during your board meetings from those who value wildlife over human life and obstruction over progress. As we turn the calendar from 2021 to 22, my holiday wish for Ada is that you make progress on the Anwar and Amber Road project. Specific to the access road, that area holds the potential for thousands of jobs, domestic supply chain opportunities for critical minerals, and enhanced national security, all things each and every Alaskan should want. Surprisingly, though, there's this openly vocal and significant minority who want to stifle Alaska. Please don't let them dissuade you from continuing to do what is right for our great state. Oh, and to those friends of mine who are listening with hatred for traditional energy community, the one that's made America great, after all, why would you fight against your friends and neighbors? as you unwrap with glee your holiday gift of Gore-Tex supplies for your next protest or the latest electronics to engage with your wokeness, take a moment to acknowledge your hypocrisy, because each and every one of those are only available to you as a result of the toils of fossil fuel and mining industry workers. For that education, Merry Christmas, everyone, and oh yeah, you're fracking welcome.
Thank you for the comments.
Mr. Chairman, could we get his name for the record?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's Rick Whitbeck, W-H-I-T-B-E-C-K.
Thank you. Is there anybody else?
If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and your affiliation if you have one.
Hi, am I on the line?
You are. Go ahead.
Awesome, thank you. My name is Arlie Hitchcock, and I'm with Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition. And I am calling in today.
Could you repeat that again?
Yes. My name is Arlie Hitchcock.
Okay.
And I am with Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition.
All right.
And I am calling in about resolution number G21-33 about the oil we sales and you all trying to appropriate $1 to $2 million, it looks like, for legal fees. And I just want to say that I think this is like a really irresponsible decision for you all to make, spending more of our money on a project that is not popular in Alaska. I know the last speaker said it was 7 in 10 people, but looking at the looking at the surveys that you all provided from the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, this is a really, really huge survey with a sample size of 705 statewide likely voters, and the majority of those people are in Anchorage, and it looks like they are in the Chamber of Commerce. They're very biased, and only 8% of rural people are represented, and not the majority of people who would be impacted, who live up on the North Slope.
You still there?
Yes, sorry, my talk just touched on a mute button. Sorry about that. And you all said in the last meeting that you don't push projects. This is pushing a project. There are lots of Alaskans that are going to be impacted by climate change. We have villages that are already being impacted by climate change that are going into the water. So I would really appreciate it if you all were focusing your energy instead on building out our energy sector to include renewable energy and provide people with more jobs in the renewable energy sector instead of chasing down this battle with the Biden administration that is unpopular.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah, thank you.
Next, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Grant Vickery. I am testifying today in my capacity as a member of the Executive Committee for the Alaska Support Industry Alliance Board of Directors. Just a bit of background, the Alliance is a trade association that represents support companies for oil, gas, and mining in the state of Alaska. We were founded in 1979 and have been advocating for responsible resource development in Alaska since that time. I'm here today on behalf of our member companies, many who built the pipeline, to express our support for Resolution G21-33 relating to ongoing development of the Section 102 area oil and gas leases project and the 2022 budget. Developing the oil and gas resources in Section 102 has been a priority for the Alliance for decades. Our members understand that such development will benefit not only Alaska and America with jobs, reliable energy, and revenue, but also the world by developing the resources that are in high demand around the globe in an environmentally responsible manner. The International Energy Administration tells us that global demand for energy will steadily increase in the next 30 years. U.S. oil and natural gas is the cleanest the most reliable way to meet this demand. Efforts to progress exploration and development in the non-wilderness coastal plain of Anwar have long been supported by the majority of Alaskans, Alaska's governors, and our entire congressional delegation. We'd like to thank ADA for their work to keep this project moving forward and state once again that the Alliance supports Resolution G21-33. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate that.
Good morning, Chair Cruz and members of the ADA board. My name is Kari Noor, and I'm the project manager for the Resource Development Council for Alaska, commonly referred to as RDC. I'm calling in today to express RDC support for oil and gas activities, including exploration and development in the 102 area of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. RDC has long supported efforts for an oil and gas lease program that will allow limited activity within the non-wilderness portion of the coastal plain of Anwar. RDC continues to support measures to properly address the Alaska National Interest Conservation Lands Act and the intent to preserve areas in the coastal plain for oil and gas development. RDC believes expanded oil and gas development and production in Alaska will help strengthen American energy independence, advance domestic energy production, and support local job growth. Further, Alaska's economy depends on responsible resource development. Alaska has rigorous permitting processes, and technology has led to major advances in reducing industry footprint. Alaska is a world leader in showing how economic development and environmental preservation coexist. Oil development on a fraction of the coastal plain would create thousands of jobs nationwide, generate billions of dollars in government revenue for public services, and further improve energy security for decades into the future. Not only does Alaska need oil and gas development in the coastal plain, but America will benefit from it too. When resources are developed in Alaska, Alaskans have a direct say in how those resources are responsibly developed. I wanted to keep my testimony short today in light of time, but please know that RDC's membership has long supported oil and gas exploration and development in the coastal plain of Anwar. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Kelly Droop, and I'm testifying today in my capacity as the president of the Board of Directors for the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, and also as a lifelong Alaskan. The Alliance is a 43-year-old trade association that advocates for responsible development of Alaska's oil, gas, and mineral resources. I'm here today on behalf of our 500-member company and their 35,000 employees to express support for Resolution G2133, related to ongoing development of the Section 1002 area oil and gas lease projects and the 2022 budget. The activity associated with the 1002 oil and gas lease project will have a significant impact on Alaska's economy as we struggle to recover from the impacts of the pandemic and the global oil crisis. The opportunity to provide growth within Alaska's oil and gas sector businesses could not have come at a better time as we are still recovering from the job loss that started in 2015. With low oil prices and the double whammy of COVID-19 and extremely low oil prices. The jobs associated with this project will not only help the oil and gas industry, but the larger Alaskan economy, as these are traditionally the highest paying jobs in the state, and those people spend their money at home. Timing is everything, and the global demand for what we have, oil, gas, critical minerals, is increasing at a rapid pace, as previous speakers attested. ADA's effort to continue working on the oil and gas lease project is a perfect response to this demand. Alaska is a world leader in showing how economic development of resources and environmental preservation coexist. Again, the Alliance supports Resolution Number G2133, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else online?
Yes.
All right. Is there anybody in the boardroom who wishes to make a public comment? Hearing, seeing none, I will close the public comment section of our agenda. That brings us up to item number 6, new business. Under A is executive session, confidential and deliberative matters related to the 2022 ADA dividend, the state, status of the Department of Law Matters and Ambler, access road to preliminary planning. I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to motion that we move into executive session to discuss confidential and deliberate matters related to the FY 2022 ADA dividend to the state status of the Department of Law Matters and Amber Access Road preliminary planning. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, which allows the board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect upon finances of ADA or are protected by law due to the rules protecting personal privacy and certain business information.
This is Board Member Sandy, I second.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you, Sandy. Is there any objection for going to executive session? Hearing seeing none, we are in executive session. Why don't we
do you want me to introduce or you will introduce the new topic in executive session? You want me to introduce?
Am I on?
Chair, you are live.
Thank you. I'll advise you the board is not taking any formal action on the matters discussed in executive session. I'd like to go back to our agenda and under the executive session and add to the executive session AK ship financing for Northern Marine. I will take a motion to add that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to add under Section 6A of New Business in Executive Session, add AK ship Northern Marine discussion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Board Member Sandy, a second.
Is there any objection to adding that to the executive session? Hearing and seeing none, we will add that. I will entertain a motion to go into executive session.
Chairman, before we do that, I can make a quick request. Randy, if we can make sure that we update the agenda, that adds that item and we post that on the website.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for clarity, I'm wondering if the attorney wants to weigh in whether we need to vote on that amendment. There was no objection. Do we need to re-vote on the entire motion? Bill is talking again. Bill.
I understood that comment as asking for my opinion. Am I correct?
That's correct.
I would, given that I'm quite certain that the amendment would pass unanimously, I would encourage a vote on the amendment simply as a curative measure just in case.
All right. Would you call the board?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
You're on mute, Bill.
Mr. Kennedy.
Bill, can you hear us?
No.
Keep going.
Mr. Fogle.
Yes.
Mr. Beeblemore.
Yes.
Bill, raise your hand if it's yes. He said, I see him say okay.
Commissioner Andrew.
I agree with this.
Chair Pruce.
Yes.
Okay, that's agreed.
Thank you. All right, the agenda's been modified from the original agenda earlier this morning. I will now move the entertaining motion to go to the executive session to discuss confidential delivery matters related to FY22-8 at dividend, the state, Ambler Access Road, preliminary planning, and AK ship financing for Northern Marine.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to move that the board enter into executive session to discuss the confidential and deliberative matters related to FY22 ADA dividend to the state status of Department of Law Matters, Ambler Access Road preliminary planning, and AK ship financing for Northern Marine. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, which allows the board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect upon the finances of ADA or are protected by law due to the rules protecting personal privacy and certain business information.
This is Board Member Sandy, a second.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you, Julie. Is there any objection? Going to executive session. Hearing and seeing this.
You're allowed, Chair.
Thank you, Dave. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. I'll advise the board is not taking any formal action on matters discussed while in executive session. Brings us to item number B on our agenda, the 2021 audited audit financial statements. Alan?
Chair, what we have before the board is on the agenda item is a presentation of ADA's financial statements, which we have closed. On line with us is Nosina Shirk with Ide Bailey, and ask her to actually go through a brief presentation on our closed financial statements for fiscal year 2021.
Thank you. Well, welcome. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. As mentioned before, my name is Nosina Shirk, and I am with Ide Bailey. I will be presenting a fiscal year 2021 audited financial statements. I'd like to take this moment and acknowledge and show appreciation for Donna, Kevin, Jenny, Brandon, and others that assisted us in the audit process to bring us to this point in time. In looking at the audited financial statements, the audit opinion, which is on pages 1 through 3, is an unmodified opinion. This is the highest opinion that can be received. It also indicates the financial statements presented are materially incorrect. As you will see, there is also an emphasis of another paragraph relating to a reserve account that wasn't included in the prior year financial statements, which needed to be adjusted to be included in prior year financial statements. The emphasis of another paragraph doesn't change the auditor's opinion. Again, I'd just like to point out that it is an unmodified opinion, which is also considered a clean opinion. Moving to pages 4 through 14 is management's discussion and analysis. This provides a narrative overview written by management and should be read in conjunction with the financial statements. Moving to pages 15 through 21 are the statements of net position, statements of revenue expenses and changes in net position, and the statement of cash flows. Moving to pages 22 through 63 are the notes to the financial statements, which provide further detailed financial statement line items and should be read in conjunction with the financial statements. Lastly, starting on page 64, there are additional schedules and statements which provide additional information and, again, should be read in conjunction with the financial statements. At this time, I'd like to open it up for any questions.
Thank you. Questions for the board?
Yes.
Questions for staff? Anything you want to put on the record, Alan?
I do want to identify for the public that is listening and also anyone that's interested is that we do have it attached to the agenda now for the financial statements, knowing that it has been closed. And it will be accessible as well on our website under the area for financial statements of the organization closing out fiscal year 2021. So they are going to be readily available by the public.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to motion that the board accept FY 2021 ADA audited financial statements.
Board Member Tammy, second.
Thank you. Is there any objection from the board accepting the financial statements as presented? Seeing none, they're accepted. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Donna. Okay, it brings us to item number C, Resolution G21-32, Declaration of ADA's Annual Dividend to the State.
Mr. Chairman, to the board, before you is Resolution number G21-32, Resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority determining dividends to be made available to the state for the fiscal year 2023 budget. I would also like to identify to the public we have attached to the agenda, we've linked to it the final draft or final form of the resolution. which is incorporating a proposed 37.5% dividend level. Again, the level that is determined under our statute regulation is between 25% to 50% of our statutory net income, and this year has been identified at 37.5%. So those numbers are quantified and within the resolution. Also attached to that is a board memorandum, which has been prepared by ADA staff, which is identifying the reasons why that 37.5% level was identified as the level to be provided to the state's general fund from our current fiscal year.
All right. So let's get the resolution on the table for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to motion resolution number G21-32, the resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority determining dividends to be made available to the state for fiscal year 2023 budget.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Okay,
thank you. All right, discussion.
So, Allen, Mr. Chairman, I do not have the board memo in front of us.
I request if we could take a brief moment for it to make the copies of the memorandum. It may. I don't know the answer either. I know for the. The new revised. Mr. Chairman, to frame the conversation with the board, what staff has done in looking at the closed financial statements based upon an earlier draft that we have been reviewing and working with Ida Bailey, we took a specific calculation that was done based upon the statute. That ultimately is referencing statute 4488.088, which we commonly reference as the dividend statute, which requires the ADA board to determine a level of dividend which is going to be paid ultimately to the state general fund for the upcoming proposal of the operating budget between a level of 25% to 50% of what is defined as statutory net income. Now, there's a specific calculation that we need to undertake in order to come to that calculation. For this year's number, the statutory net income came to $16.1 million. And from that, we then did an evaluation of, with capital assets available, the issues in place with our loan programs and project assets, the ongoing investment requirements that we have, the allocations ultimately of that capital, and looking at ultimately what was available really for distribution in support of the state's general fund out of that total amount. From that, that's where we came to the calculation of a total of roughly $6.5 million, or in total, an actual number, $6,479,600 to be determined out of that statutory net income for distribution to the state. And that's taking into account, again, reserves that we believe need to be incorporated for the fiscal responsibility and management of the agency itself.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. What number did you say would be for a 50% dividend?
Well, that would be 50% of what was 16.1 million in, or 16.2 million statutory net income. So the maximum dividend would have been 8.2 million. I'm sorry, excuse me, 8.1 million.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out in the memo that we did have some underlying concerns of future commitments, encumbrances, and obligations, as well as a project pipeline that has some significant dollar values associated with that. I was wondering if you could explain to the board and to the public what those encumbrances are or future pipeline projects.
Certainly. What we have in place is investments that are ongoing that are ultimately embedded into a final maturity under our loan programs and under our projects. We also have capital that are representative of return of return of and on those investments that we hold for future investment into Alaskan projects. So of that capital that is on our balance sheet, we have allocations already in place for ongoing projects. What we're looking at is reservations for our investment in Ambler Access Project. That's not just the amounts that we have in under agreement with Ambler Metals for the full development of the Ambler Access Project at this point in time to get to a final investment decision, but it also is allocating capital that we know will be required for the future funding of the construction of that road. So that represents really an additional upwards of 159 that is going to need to be contributed by ADA as owner and operator of that road, or ultimately contracting operation of that road. There's additional requirements that we have with the leases that we undertook. There's a 10-year obligation of lease payments in place. There's a obligation ultimately to undertake the seismic survey activity, which we believe is a significant component to being able to identify and attract a strategic partner for the full development of those leases and be able to recognize the economic development that would come from that investment. We have an ongoing obligation within our loan participation program, which we measure at $60 to $65 million a year. So depending upon the way that we're able to recycle capital within that program, we have reserved $65 million for the loan participation program itself. We also anticipate that each year we're going to have upwards of $25 to $50 million in new projects. And as we've seen with COVID-19, we've had to undertake emergency programs. So we also incorporate reservations for that type of undertaking. So ultimately, we look at it, we have an excess of $400 million in allocated capital for our future projects. We have a pipeline that's in place that has 13 active projects. They have a funding requirement, be it from ADA or in partnership with ADA, that has a future commitment level that could exceed $1 billion. So it's that type of economic development activity that we see as an ongoing requirement of the authority, and our capital is really allocated to those purposes.
Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Can you tell me what the last 2 years' dividends have been to the state?
Yeah, the previous year, the dividend was set at the 50% level, and that was at $17 million. The year prior to that, I would have to look onto the full listing that we have.
And thank you. I'd also like to note that in the memo it says, that our average dividend has been $16.5 million per year. So looking at a 6.4, that's less than half of what the average has been. And looking at, this is a dividend to the owner, which is the state of Alaska. And I guess I don't support less than a 50% dividend, and I'm wondering if you could describe, if it was set at 50% for the total of $8.1 million, what activities might be adjusted to accommodate that?
In order to answer your question initially, you asked what it was the year prior. We have a full listing of the amount of the total amounts that we have provided as a dividend payments since the initiation of the dividend program. So, through the chair, Sandra, the total amounts that we have distributed in funding ultimately to the state of Alaska has been in excess of $440 million. With this new recommendation, that would approach really close to $450 million. So historically, and answering again your question, last year was $17.5 million, and then the year before the 50% level was $14.475 million. I don't know if it's a distinction, but the year prior was at $10.3 million, and that was a 31% level declaration. But again, in aggregate, it's been, with the current recommended contribution, we're talking about $446 million in total that would have been declared to the state.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to move the dividend amount from 37.5 to 50% with the $8.1 million inserted for the $37.5 million, $37.5 million percentage rate. If I could have a second, I'll speak to it.
All right.
Thank you, Sandra. Board Member McKinnon here. The state's and America's financial picture has been heavily impacted, as well as ADA's financial, by the current pandemic that continues to raise uncertainty in the market. And to Ms. Mueller's point, in the past, the state has received, as in the form of dividends, an average of, as been said, 16.5, 14 points, 4 and then 10.3 and 50% dividends over the past 2 years, past 3 years total for those scenarios. The Department of Revenue put out a new fiscal forecast that has said that the state would receive additional revenues in the coming years, but I would like to point out that that is uncertain as well, and everybody knows that when we look at those particular numbers. Black Friday wasn't a good day for energy, therefore not a very good day for Alaska. I believe, and this is not my area inside of the Department of Revenue where I work, but I believe the prices were estimated in the neighborhood of $85 per barrel. It's in that approximate range. I just pulled it up today to see what's happening in the market right as we speak. We're dropping down into the 60s, high 60s right now. Right now, at this moment, it's saying it's 65.869. So while there is optimism in Alaska's future about energy production, we have a federal government who is making production uncertain in Alaska and are challenging us and ADA, whether it's in the 1002 arena or whether it's a pipeline or whatever we want to do. In fact, Alaska's livelihood under this administration seems to not be a concern to the administration. And that's troublesome to me because I know that ADA is trying to create jobs and trying to create opportunities for Alaskans. So with the uncertainty in the budget, I would like to point out, as a partner with the state of Alaska, as their economic arm, as a contributor to the bottom line when it comes to the operating budget, we play a role in that, and that role has been substantially higher in previous years. And we're under substantially more stress as an organization trying to hold up small businesses. And I understand that. I understand that greatly, but I do support a 50% dividend to the state of Alaska. And I'm basing that first on the uncertainty of the price per barrel and the need for funds at a state level to be able to help promote economic opportunities and security for Alaskans. The second point I'd like you to think about beyond volatility of a price per barrel of oil and how that has created a better picture than we were looking at a year ago under a COVID scenario, is that as the federal government is trying to reach Americans' need, and they have passed an infrastructure bill, that there are different perspectives around America about. One perspective is that this is great, that needed assets will flow to deteriorating properties and that we can extend the livelihoods and invest in communities and therefore create new jobs. Another perspective on that is that it is debt that America cannot afford and that will be passed on to Alaskans and other Americans. That scenario, looking at the infrastructure bill, whether you believe it is the greatest thing that is coming our way or if you have trepidation about the debt that will pass on to future generations, either perspective is that Alaska will see an influx of revenue coming in for infrastructure in our budgets going forward. And I'm sure that you are aware that that will require match. Many of these programs require matching funds from the state that will receive them. So to access them, our state will have to have general fund dollars to do that. And my understanding is those general fund dollars are not in our current budget right now. They certainly weren't in that negative scenario budget that we had to go into our CBR and draw from savings account, even under a $16.5 million contribution dividend payment to last year's budget. So thinking about wanting Alaska to be at the table, if we're going to go into debt, if we've made that decision as a nation, if Alaska does not have the 10% matching funds, it means that even though our residents will carry the debt load going forward, we will not benefit in the same way if we can't access all of those funds. And so I would suggest that we need to bring to bear as much as we can to the table in consideration of keeping ADA whole and being able to recycle our loan payments back into loan originations to carry us through this time. I just want you to consider that the state has additional costs that will be associated with that infrastructure bill to be able to realize those projects in the state of Alaska. And so for those two reasons, from a financial perspective, I would like this board to consider a 50% dividend payment as we've done in the past. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Anna. All right. Any objection to the amendment?
I object.
All right. That's a call for a vote. Ramey? Would you please pull the board on an amendment to Resolution G21-32?
Clarity, the vote is on whether or not
to increase the
amendment.
Yeah, go back up to 50%.
Ms. Sandy?
No.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
He's not here.
Okay. Mr. Fogel?
No.
Sandermuller, from the Planning Commissioner.
Yes.
Chair Cruz.
No. Still got one more.
Mr. Beaglemore.
No.
Does that pass?
Motion bill. All right. That brings us back to the prime resolution G21-32, as presented originally. Any further discussion? Are you ready for the vote? Call for the question.
Call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Amy, would you pull the board, please?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Ms. Sinemai?
No.
Mr. Beavermore?
Yes.
Chair Cruz?
Yes.
Passes.
Thank you. All right, that brings us on the agenda item number G21-33, section 1002, area oil and gas leases. Alan?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, normally in a past motion you come back around and you ask the person that passed, so I'd like my vote to reflect now.
Okay.
I don't know how the procedure goes, but yeah.
Well, it's on the record now.
Thank you.
I believe you have the correct procedure for number 10.
Support
board, we have resolution number G21-33, which is a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority relating to ongoing development of the Section 1002 area oil and gas leases project and continuation ultimately the 2022 budget. What staff is requesting the board to consider with this resolution, and we have a memorandum which is attached to the resolution, which is defining what activities we're looking to continue to undertake in 2022. The board originally approved through resolution G20-31 the allocation of $20 million to pursue the bidding on the lease tracts within the coastal plain of Anwar. We were successful on 9 of the 11 tracts that we bid upon. We were awarded and finalized 7 of those tracts, which we paid for in the year 2021. We're looking to continue the budget ultimately to pay for the lease expenses on those 7 lease tracts and make payment ultimately to BLM under those contracts. That in and of itself is an allocation that's approximately $3.6 million. We have the exact number that's within the memorandum, the exact number being $3,657,550. We also have ongoing development expenses. We had, through a further resolution approved by the board, the authority to engage with professional services for planning, pre-permitting activity, pre-development activities, ultimately to look at targeting to undertake survey activity on the lease tracts in 2022. We have been delayed in that process by actions of the BLM and the Department of Interior. We are looking to continue to pursue these pre-development planning activities for seismic on those tracks in this coming year in 2022. So we're looking to also have that $1.5 million allocation continued in the budget, the total amount of $20 million that was formally allocated. We also have other project expenses that we believe will be incurring that we want to be able to undertake in pursuit of those lease tracks and legal defense ultimately of those lease tracks. And on that particular note, what I want to identify and have also explained with attachments in the memorandum is that we have taken the step at this stage of filing a suit against the Department of Interior, the President of the United States as the head of the executive branch, and other parties within the Bureau of Land Management, Department of Interior, for actions that they have taken to delay our opportunity for economic development on those leases. And with that, I am able to identify the fact that ASRC and the North Slope Borough have reviewed our complaint, and they are going to be joining us in that complaint and representing really the interests, the economic development interests on the North Slope, and the support that there is for responsible development within the coastal plain, the non-wilderness defined area, the Section 1002 Anwar area. We anticipate that the state has an interest as well.
What about KIC?
Ketobicoke Corporation is currently reviewing that, but they have not taken any action at this point. They are a member of the Voice. The Voice has frequently identified the support for economic, reasonable or responsible economic development of those leases, particularly within their own lands within ANCSA, identified under ANCSA within the Anwar area.
All right. Do you think it's an economic issue for them if they're not joined already, or do they give you an idea when they would make a decision?
They are currently reviewing that. It's really for them to identify what the particular issues are that are around it. I really can't speak for them on that context. But my understanding is they're currently reviewing it, and that's also in hand with Marshall Borough. So at this stage, really what we are requesting to do is to continue the $20 million to be available for use by staff to meet the project expenses in pursuing the development of the tracks we have under contract with the BLM.
I'm going to put the motion on the table for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move Resolution G21-33, the resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority relating to ongoing development of the Section 1002 area oil and gas leases project and the 2022 budget.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Albert. Discussion. Hands up if you want to talk about it.
Mr. Chairman, Alan, can you specifically state what the federal government has done to inhibit our right to kind of start exploring the 1002 area for the leases that we have purchased?
I can certainly provide you the information and the reasons why we have acted to ultimately file a suit and a complaint on those particular issues. The key drivers are, is initially with the new administration coming on, an executive order was issued to review the status of the lease program. The Department of Interior at that point in time, really on June 1st, issued a letter to us that purported to suspend operations on those leases. We asked at that point in time to have definition of what the statutory and regulatory basis was for that declaration. We have received no information, no communication from the Department of Interior on what those particular points. It was then followed up by a notice of intent for public comment on a supplemental environmental impact statement based upon legal deficiencies that they had identified but that were not declared in the notice. We provided public comment at that point in time, which is also attached with this memorandum, showing exactly the particular areas that we see that there have been in cases of procedural elements, lack of procedure being undertaken by the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Land Management in, as I would highlight, direction from the Department of Interior, actions that are against the State of the Compact, actions that are against ANCSA, with the land agreements that are in place ultimately, and really highlighting the issues of Ketubi-Gnubi Corporation, which were asked earlier by our chair, and actions against Anilkin, which is the state's rights of access to lease or to economic development and the oil and gas resources that are identified within the non-wilderness section 1002 area. We filed permit applications for rights of access and archaeological studies to be undertaken by our professional services in August. They were declined to be undertaken by the Bureau of Land Management, which identifies specifically the suspension of operations on the oil and gas leases by the Department of Interior. The request that we're making for archaeological studies, for access, did not require having leases in place. There were scientific studies. They do happen to be something that is required for our plan of operations, ultimately for a seismic survey. So it did combine with that for our particular use, but the individual request of those permits itself did not require an oil and gas lease, and it was suspended or not reviewed on a basis of our owning the oil and gas leases. So our conclusion from this, in requesting the information, identifying how this could be the case so we can understand why this step was taken, the fact of no response, the fact of going forward to completely review an environmental impact statement that was robust, as defined by the Department of Interior itself in its record of decision, heavily commented on over 80,000 independent areas of comment, done by career staff, not political appointed staff, but career staff at BLM, in the review ultimately of the lease program itself. And, you know, again, the denial of our ability to pursue activities on those leases left us solely with the only course of action that we could take was to file suit to identify the fact that our rights are being impeded upon. Economic development, which is critical for the state of Alaska, is being delayed by this process and what appears to be, in our view, purposely delayed. Ultimately, we had to take action to defend those rights.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. You're asking for the total of $20 million, so not an additional amount of funds.
We're not asking for any additional funds than what was originally allocated with Resolution 2031. We're asking for that to continue into fiscal year, well, not fiscal year, but calendar year 2022. The reason ultimately why we're identifying it that way was with the initial allocation, we had specifically highlighted the first year's expenses, and now we're entering into the second year under those leases.
Thank you.
Further discussion. All right. So it's on the table. So I will call for the vote. Will you pull the board?
Ms. Handy? Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Ms. Bonner?
Yes.
Mr. Beavermore?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Brings us to item number EG21-31, AKA Ship Financing for Northern Marine. Helen?
Mr. Chairman, and for the board, we have resolution number G21-31, which is resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, approving a loan under the AKA Ship Program to Kayak, Inc., Northern Marine and Logistics, LLC, Northern Contractors and Consulting, LLC, to finance a shipyard work on the vessel MV Kayak. The shipyard work itself is occurring in Seward by JAG Alaska. Attached to the resolution, Chairman, is a board memorandum which is identifying the terms of the loan that's being proposed under the AKA Ship Program. If I may take a step back and just identify what the AKA Ship Program is. 2 years ago, we had proposed a pilot program to the board, which was approved, in establishing a program under our economic development account, which is 4488-172, to level the playing field for Alaska shipyards in competition that's within the Northwest region here. And that's particularly with financing programs that are in place by the EDC that support Canadian shipyards, as well as financing programs that are within the Puget Sound area that are drawing Alaska ships ultimately to those shipyards. So in order to level the playing field, we identified a specific program, put it in place, put a structure in place, which we also defined within the memorandum, which in itself is loans that are between $500,000 up to $1.5 million, which is available to ship owners on their vessels for cycle work that's being undertaken that cycle work exclusively at Alaska shipyards. So it's looking to ultimately keep Alaska ships within our waters, home porting here, having their cycle work done and maintained. The program itself has undertaken activity with uncrews. That's how it was initiated for activity at the Ketchikan shipyard. We've also followed that up last year with the approval of a barge modification and cycle work for Drake Construction, which is currently in action in Cox View area and the peninsula portion of Northwest Arctic Borough. This is a new proposal under the program for a vessel which is being, again, cycle work activity happening in JAG Alaska, which will be utilized in Nome or Norton Sound area for the next few years. The loan itself is proposed at 2 years. The program underlying it seeks to work with the seasonality of Alaska's principal commercial activities. So it modifies payments to interest-only periods or for deferred principal repayments, given the fact that there's seasonal activity and contract work and we've modified, we've sculpted those payments for this loan. And you'll see that in the terms that we've attached with the board memorandum. Of itself, we require that there is a vessel survey that's in place, and we do a 75% maximum loan to value based upon the first ship mortgage that's in place under the vessel that is going to be part of the security for the loan. We're also attaching, in this case, a security or cash security account, which accounts for that first ship mortgage. We're taking your second mortgage position. Ultimately, we have a loan to value ratio which is below the 75%. Also, for the board, I want to identify that we have the ship owner who's available for any questions, comments by the board, and I would like to also introduce Morgan Neff, our Chief Investment Officer. He's currently in charge of administering the AK ship program.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Before I ask if the board, if they'd like to hear from the ship owner, I'd like to give a little bit of background on Northern Marine, as well as the other partners involved with the operation. Northern Marine Lines owner is Cliff Johnson. He's a general contractor. He's been a barge and landing craft owner and operator since 97. He owns and currently operates Northern Construction Consulting in addition to Northern Marine Lines, which is an Alaska-based and native-owned firm that provides marine and logistics services. Mr. Johnson has owned many other type of vessels, which include but are not limited to tugs, barges, landing craft, which is operated in the Bristol Bay, Dillingham, Yukon, and Bethel, Delta and Nome and Martin Sound and Kotzebue and Kobuk River region. The other guarantors are Jack and J.D. King. Collectively, have close to 50 years of project and construction management experience. J.D. is the founder of King Industries Corporation and serves as the primary liaison for all of King Company's facilities and all aspects of their projects and supervises both the technical and admin execution of their projects. With that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Johnson, who has joined us on the phone. Mr. Johnson, are you there? You might need to unmute. He's on the line.
Okay, sorry. Can you hear me?
Hi, Cliff. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. I think it would be really great to give the board a little bit more, of an understanding of your background and walk them through your business plan and what you've been able to execute to date and what the future looks like for your organization.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a fighting a little bit of crud here, and I don't know if anybody heard, but COVID is going through my household, and so we're fighting through it, and we'll be fine, so... But, yeah, thank you. So I'm born and raised in Nome. Spent most of my life in Nome, joined the service, got out of the service, went back to Nome, started working constructional, dropped out of college. I'll give you the short version. Dropped out of college and started barging and doing construction in Northern Sound. Did that for about 17 or 18 years. And then I spent about 6 years, the last 6 years, as an executive with two companies. One, UIC Albero, was vice president of operations and North Slope operations and barrel operations and commercial, including the marine division. And then I spent the last couple of years at Grand Strait Naval Corporation in business development and government contracting. And I started doing work back in what I call my region. I'm a shareholder of Bering Strait Native Corporation, Sitnisoft Native Corporation, and a shareholder of NANA Regional Corporation. I started doing some work in Diomede, chartered a tug and a barge for a season, did a bunch of work there, and ended up getting a contractor or multiple contracts to do work in Diomede. We had two seasons where the mainline barging company could not deliver to Diomede just because it's such a difficult location. So we ended up tearing down the store and then sitting for 2 years before we could get back in because there's no barge service. So long story short, I got out and started looking for a landing craft, purchased what used to be the Glacier, which is now the Kayak, we renamed it, from Allen Marine. Just over a year ago, down at Sitka, brought it to Seward to get the cycle work done,
had a couple events happen where we had a fire and had Coast Guard inspections and ended up getting quite a bit more work done than we had planned, albeit we'll have a new landing craft now at this point, so we're excited about that, and we're looking forward to getting back to Diomede. We have a significant backlog of work in Diomede. We've got to complete a new store, a new construction of a store. We've been working on renovating 31 homes in Diomede. We've got a new water treatment plant we're putting in, a new water tank, new storage, just a whole bunch of work in Diomede for the next several years, and this vessel will serve us nicely, including work in the region where I'm from, and I'm going to station and base this vessel out of Nome and Norton Sound, and so it'll be the only vessel of its type in the area that's not owned by either Alaska Marine Lines or Alaska Logistics, so we're excited about that.
Mr. Johnson, thanks for that. Just a quick question. You're currently doing work as we've seen through your financials, but the boat is not yet has yet been finished and commissioned. How are you completing that work today, and with what kind of vessel or structure?
So the work that we're completing now is the work that's been accumulated all summer. What we ended up doing was slowing down, because once we determined that we could not make our 2021 season, we put it on the back burner so I could focus on the work at hand, which was I ended up chartering another landing craft in Nome this season, and made six or seven trips to Diomede. And so what we're doing now is going back to Seward, and we'll have our crew along with JAG and trying to get this boat completed, and our goal is to have it back in the water by the end of March and ready for the 2022 season.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Morgan, can you explain the terms of the loan?
So under the AK SHIP program, the max term that it can be is 2 years, and we have the ability to defer principal up for 12 months. The terms that we're currently proposing under the resolution are for that max term of 24 months, and for the first two quarters to be deferred as interest only, with principal amortization to pick up through the remaining life of the loan for the remaining, I guess that would be 18 months after that. And then we have significant security interest as a second lien behind a first lien mortgage from a bank. But we're also asking the borrower in our proposal to put up a reserve account that matches that first lien, and that ratchets down as that principal also gets reduced, essentially helping put us back into a first lien status. But we also have the personal guarantors of all three of the principals, as well as co-borrower relationships between Kayak, Northern Marine, and Northern Construction.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may. I believe the gentleman on the phone said that he has a lot of contract work from now into the future that's backed up. Can you just elaborate on the type of contracts that he has in place, and have you reviewed those?
We have reviewed those extensively, and I will tell you, and I'd like for Mr. Johnson to chime in here. We started this conversation several months ago when they first brought the boat into JAG in order to get the work done. And since then, we've seen their contract backlog grow exponentially over that time. And now they have the ability to, with the hopefully the commissioning coming on the first quarter of 2022, go after even more work that they were fairly limited by with their current vessel. Mr. Johnson, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that pretty much sums it up. The one thing that we found ourselves in a pretty unique position with Diomede is there's it's a very difficult place to work. It's very challenging to get there. Every time we go to Diomede, we have to build our own landing space. We have to build our own barge landing. So So marine companies don't go there because they don't typically do the work like a general contractor would do. So that enables us to get in there, build our own barge landing, unload the materials, and once we're there, they've just been such a community that hasn't had any infrastructure built in such a long time that we ended up just taking all of the work and most of it, as you say, 90% of that work is cost plus or hourly rate billable, and we help build the proposals and we have multiple, we work for the city, we work for the tribe, we work for the corporation, all the time need.
Thank you. My last question is, we know something's going to go wrong on these trips to Diomede. You know, it's water, treacherous. The treacherous area where they're going to and docking, and so there's going to be some damage to the boat. Is there repair yards in Nome, or will the repairs have to be done back here in Seward for the boat?
I could talk a little bit to that because what we ended up doing. The short answer is yes. We are able to pull vessels out in Nome. And I think Tim could talk to some of the work that they've done there with our partnership and our relationship with Tim. But Nome does have a expanded port facility where this vessel could come out and have work done in Nome.
Just to follow up on that, I do want to identify, we have Tim Jagielewski, who's here with us from the Seward Shipyard. He's one of the principals in Jagielewska. And he can answer any questions, too, if you have about the work that's being done on the vessel and follow up on what Cliff had just highlighted.
Where will the boat go when the known sound is iced in? Where will it be stationed?
So we have the option of we have the option of pulling the vessel out in Nome for the winter. But typically we have so much northbound freight and southbound freight that we will go ahead and go all the way back to Seward and spend the winter in Seward.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Albert. Other questions?
We do also have a short presentation that's from the shipyard itself. If you would like to get an update on the activity that's happening there at JAG, they're one of the principal components of you know, what we put the AK ship program in place for.
No, I think we're good, Alan. We're running behind. So we just saw the Energy Authority Board meeting here, folks. I appreciate the offer, though.
Thanks.
All right. We have the resolution on the table. I'll call for the questions. Amy?
Ms. Andy?
Yes.
Mr. Kinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Beeblemore?
Yes.
Chair Cruz?
Yes.
Mr. Hassey?
Thank you. All right. Item number F is a board memorandum.
I thought we did.
All right. Well, why don't we do it again? Why don't you make a motion for it, Albert?
I motion resolution number G21-31. The resolution to Kayak Inc., Northern Marine and Logistics LLC, Northern Contractors and Consulting LLC to finance shipyard work on the vessel and B Kayak.
Before I'm going to stand here,
second. Any further discussion? Call the board.
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Vogel?
Yes.
Senator
Wallace? Yes.
Mr. Beeblemore?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, back to the agenda. Board Memorandum on Investment Portfolio and Economic Exposure Analysis, Financial Entities with Anti-Arctic Development Policies. Albert? I'm sorry, Alan. I'm getting tired.
Mr. Chairman, before the board here is a memorandum that staff has prepared to address a request by the board from our last board meeting, and this is following up on discussions about financing. We had a review of our investment policy and questions that were raised about what level of investment securities that we currently hold in banks or financial institutions that currently have policies against Arctic development. So we started looking into the different financial institutions that have those policies. In the August special session that we had related to the investment portfolio, the general conversation we had, which led up to the proposal on the investment policy, there was a presentation provided by Cowen, which identified really there a fairly large amount of financial institutions that were easily identified having those policies and what effect it had on our investments, what return they contributed, what the differential was from that contribution, you know, ultimately the benefit that we'd be losing if we took a policy to not invest in those parties or financial institutions, securities from those financial institutions, because of their anti-Arctic development. Taking a step back, when we talk about anti-Arctic development, really these are policies that these financial institutions have identified about either restricting future investment or intensifying their review of Arctic development. And when they define Arctic development, in very few cases is it broadly Arctic. It's predominantly focused on fossil fuel generation. In some cases, it's only oil. In other cases, oil and gas. In other cases, it's broader to incorporate coal. But it is predominantly focused on fossil fuel development within the Arctic region. Now, the Arctic region itself has various definitions. So what we've done is we're just looking at what entities could eventually impact our operations, our activities, and defining it amongst those financial institutions. And what we saw ultimately from that that analysis, we've summarized within this memorandum. The bottom line, there's not a material impact should this policy be undertaken or should this be made policy, because they do not constitute a large proportion of our investments or securities at this time. We're predominantly investing in government securities or quasi-government entities or ultimately financial vehicles that are not directly these entities or financial institutions. It has a marginal return impact to our current portfolio returns on that side. But what we're also identifying here is that it's not just our investment portfolio that we should be considering when we think about this type of policy. It's the impact broadly against what our programs are within the state of Alaska. And in that context, unless there's some other alternatives that we really define and we set up ahead of time, there can be a bigger impact that happens, because if you take the top 8 financial institutions, they are the larger underwriters within conduit revenue bonds, other type of bond financings. They do impact our role as a conduit revenue bond issuing agency. They are a major underwriter contributor to, you know, healthcare networks within the state of Alaska through their underwriting and then ultimately the employment that comes for that. We would need to really define other alternatives of the way that we support those programs. And I think those alternatives are structurable. They're there. It's just this is ultimately to another impact that we should be considering. So with that, having summarized that, I do want to ask Morgan Neff to provide a little bit of input on some of the detail of the analysis that we went through.
Thanks, Alan. As Mr. White just said, the impact that it has on our investment portfolio, which is externally managed, is fairly immaterial. But it has been a positive net effect. But again, the highlighted portion of what it does on our actual programs is where materiality really exists. And if you look at over the last 5 years, ADA has facilitated approximately $423 million in total revenue bond issuances. And almost 91% of that, $386 million of that, contained counterparty exposure
of one or more of the listed companies that have adopted anti-Arctic oil and gas development policies. Now, in that $386 million, this constituted, you know, programs that primarily benefited Alaska Native and rural community access to health care, and it also helped support over $586 million in annual Alaska-based revenue, $291 million in annual Alaska-based personnel expenses associated with 1,700 annual Alaska-based jobs. This also has an impact on our potential pipeline as we look to efficiently maximize ADA's balance sheet through capital recycling programs and looking to fund long-term multi-generational projects through public-private partnerships, as well as continuing to issue municipal bonds opportunities either through this conduit revenue program or through actually ADA's balance sheet. And what we've identified here is just a sampling of the largest banks. Yes?
We've read that.
Okay.
We're running out of time here. So the question I have for you is, are there alternatives out there?
I don't have an alternative for you today because they make up such a large portion of the market, sir.
So you did the research, what it does. So my suggestion is you find alternatives.
Okay. So,
and you get ready for a press release.
Can I ask a question for clarification, right, of alternatives? There are alternatives for our investment portfolio, right? So we talk about securities that have been issued by the financial institutions. They're clearly alternatives. They're identified. We can do that. And again, that's a very marginal 7 basis point.
Eight basis point. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the, but what we're talking about is the broader element of the financial support.
Go research it and let us know. Okay?
Well, I can tell you.
You said there were $400 million in part from Commodore Revenue Bonds, 386 for the financial institutions that are anti-Arctic power. So there's 200 and some, or 20 million plus of Commodore Revenue Bonds will give with a company that's on anti-power.
Just, yeah, just in perspective, they made the conscious decision not to invest in the Arctic. I assume they looked at our business and it was inconsequential to them.
Through the chair, Board Member Fogel, those decisions on the counterparty on the conduit revenue side are not our decisions. They are the borrowers, which a lot of them have been in the healthcare industry. Those aren't directions that we make or provide. They come attached with the application.
But we'll undertake what the board is asking us for, really evaluating alternatives.
Yep.
And we'll come back and identify with you, you know, what we're able to see as alternative structures and what that, you know, the full volume that could represent. And if there's any remaining.
If the borrower was one picking the underwriter, so be it. We're right at the loop on that. If we're picking, then that's a different story. So who's picking the conduit? Who's picking the underwriter?
We don't pick the underwriter in that context.
So it really doesn't affect us, does it?
Well, that's what we're asking you if we're looking at.
I think it's more important than who we're investing our money with. So the borrower, if they're doing a conduit revenue bond and they say bring in XYZ, so be it. If they ask us, obviously they'll be alternative. So pretty simple. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the research. I found it interesting that there were actually better returns with financial organizations that have not adopted this policy. And
I wonder if you're going to say that.
And I do wonder how long it will take the general public to realize that they're receiving less in returns from these companies that are doing that. So I appreciate the research and understanding the impact. I think that the answer from the board is twofold, and I want to be clear. If outside organizations are bringing a party to the table to finance one of their projects, that we're not going to comment on that. What we're talking about as a board is how we invest our board's money, Alaska's money, to try to benefit those, and that we did see, even though it's rather small numbers, 8 basis points. Was 8, right? Not 6. Okay. 8 basis points, that is a positive return for Alaskans to do that.
Thank you, Annika. Further comments? Appreciate the research.
Yeah, I just
more. And we'll be there.
Thank you both for doing that analysis. Yeah. This is something that's important to me. To me, it's no different than us suing the federal government for our rights in 1002.
So next up is item number 7, and I'm going to ask the director, we can all read basically what's in our packet. I do want to go to, though, the participation direct finance portfolio analysis. Okay. Just to highlight, because, you know, the green, red, yellow, update on that. Just and then you know, everything else we can see, and I'll just say the next board meeting is the 27th of January. So, Alan, would you mind, or Albert, or whoever, to comment on this portfolio analysis of the 1031?
This is the loan dashboard report, which we're providing the update on the loan participation programs, as well as having some information on our direct loan programs. So what we have is we're showing the total balance. We started off the year at $464 million. We're currently having an ending balance as of the end of 10/31, 2021 at $448 million. However, what I would want to identify is the fact that you asked a bit earlier about the number of loans that have been closed. We have the anticipated funding numbers, which is on page 10 of 14, which shows a grand total of $8.3 million. So we're still running a balance here, ultimately adding that $8.3 back. So you're talking about roughly $456 million that's in place within that one portfolio. The one thing, too, I want to identify is that had been highlighted by the board and requested by the board that we added to the program with this report was the breakdown between the different banks, and that's located on page 5 of 14. And here you'll see what participation of that total balance, that total portfolio that we have within the loan participation program. This is the breakdown between the different financial institutions across the state. Now we have included in here 8 different financial institutions that have been identified participating in the program, but it is largely concentrated within Northrim Bank and FNBA. As I identified earlier, through our commercial finance director, Tiffany Jansen, we really are actively looking at engaging with the broader financial community within the state to identify opportunities that they have equally within this program.
So, Chairman. Sorry, Alan. I just want to go back a little bit. You talked about how the starting balance was about $464 million. The ending balance was roughly $447.5 million. And then you wanted to add on the $8 million of new loan participations, but that really isn't the same accounting period because this is as of 10/31, and these new loans are coming on as of December 1st.
Yeah, I'm trying to identify the fact that the actual balance, because these are commitments and these are fundings that are going to occur, but the actual balance, like the total within our portfolio, is really $8.5 million higher because of these anticipated, well, these fundings that will be happening coming forward.
Well, I guess I beg to differ because once we would see the close out of the year, then we could truly see these new loans that have been impacted because you're going to have another month of pay downs. So you're beginning to end the balance at the end of November, December.
Well,
it's going to be different.
I don't disagree on the veracity of the comment. I'm just trying to highlight the fact that we don't really have what appear to be a declining balance in our loan participation program. That it actually is maintaining that level. We've identified earlier the fact that we are anticipating $63 to $65 million in fundings just this coming to this fiscal year. So that's really what I'm trying to identify.
In 4 months, you basically have dropped a little less than $20 million in this time period, 7/1 to 10/31, and so. I don't know. That doesn't calculate to me what you're saying. I understand that you're bringing on new, but I'd like to see the true timing of everything. So at the end of the year, I'd like to see this again
with all, everything incorporated, including the new loans, and as of the end of the year, so that we can see truly what the starting and ending balance is.
You will have that. That will be in the full 12-year at for the report. That would be as of June 30, 2022. That will be the full fiscal year.
Okay. We can't do 6 months. Or...
You'll have that in the next month with December for 12/31. So the next report on January 27th. You will see the full six-month numbers at that time.
And we've had no loans, no new loans in October, just November and December.
If you're talking about, that is a different list of parties that have actually done new applications that are coming in. That's not that list that I was talking about. That is on,
I guess you understand where my thought process
is. Yeah, the information is there is what I'm trying to highlight to you. The information is here with this number. If you talked about pending applications, that's on the following page, page 12 of 14.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one pending application. They received October 28, 2021.
Those are all the loans for October, so I really should be adding basically $22.6 million to this $447.5.
No, because this one has not been approved as yet, that I'm aware. So we're only talking about, I would only add, to me, I think it would be prudent to only add to that number what you know we've approved, which are the pending fundings, because those are what's been approved.
I guess we'll talk offline, Alan. It's not computing in my head for me, but maybe it is for you.
Okay, further questions. I do notice that we have on one is a delinquency percent by lender. Everybody's okay except for Key Bank. That's 13.9%.
Yeah, that's again. That I relate to that where you have the amount. Key Bank is a very small amount of our portfolio. So this is the same issue where this because they're a smaller amount within our portfolio. They only remit payments once a month. For the larger organizations that we have within the program, they actually remit on a weekly basis. So what can happen is, and what is occurring currently, is that a remittance. It's going to be received, and we will have received it after we prepare the report. And that's the case that's happened in this situation.
Thank you.
And it shows us a larger percentage because they have a lower portion of our total portfolio. So it's a high percentage of their total loans. Ultimately, what I would try to highlight is that our delinquencies continue to be very well managed by our group and are much lower than has been previously reported. And what I would identify, too, what I identified earlier is that the way it was being reported were unallocated funds. We spent a lot of time making sure that these funds are allocated and that they're timely in the way that we're reporting our delinquencies. That they're not, they've never have been actual delinquencies. They've been delays internally in the way that we've been allocating funds.
Other questions? All right, next board meeting is on the 27th of January, 2022. Board comments. Julie?
I just wanted to welcome our new board members to the meeting. So welcome. We're looking forward to working with you. I also wanted to just acknowledge the resolution G21-33 and say, at the time that we agreed as a board to lease that small section of the Tennessee region, it was in hopes of seeing economic development, creating jobs in the region, and of course having Alaskans responsibly develop Alaska's resources. And so just to hear further updates today on federal administration and the delays and impeding Alaskans' guaranteed rights of access. Through ANCSA and ANILCA is in my mind a clear overreach and really upsetting. So I appreciated the ability to vote in favor of that resolution. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was, and this is Board Member Sandy, was the discussion today that the public may have heard related to the 50% versus the 37% dividend, and the conversation really in relation to the projects that are in the pipeline and what we know we sort of already have obligated or may have obligated coming down the road, and wanting to make sure that we have the ability to fulfill our primary mission to promote, develop, and advance economic growth and diversification in Alaska. But it was a challenging conversation, and I just really appreciate both Board Member McKinnon and Ms. Moore's points as they argued in favor of 50%. So, thank you.
And further discussion or comments? Glad you like to welcome Bill to the sign. Looking forward to work with him. Obviously, I just read a deal where that new variant just hit California under COVID. So, 7-11, let's see how things go for our country and Alaska, and the ramifications. It's been challenging for obviously the state of Alaska, and in particular Ada, which is in our preview and our financial responsibility. Thanks to the staff for their hard work and their diligence and taking our sometimes tough questions. But that's how we vet projects. We're good stewards of the public money. And since I don't see anybody else wishing to make a comment, I will call for a motion for adjournment.
Mr. Chair, we want that motion. I move for adjournment.
Board Member McKinnon, I move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Board Member Sandy, second.
Is there any objection to adjournment? Hearing and seeing none, the ADA meeting is adjourned. We will take a 5-minute break, and we'll go into the Energy Authority Board meeting. Thank you.